I'm excited that we're starting as the industry to think about, and we have really alignment with the industry and the different health groups to address elimination. And as we talked about with pseudorabies, we were fortunate enough to get a vaccine to come through. And we do have technology on the horizon if the industry accepts this with a PRRS-resistant pig that would also be quite proactive in terms of supporting the elimination program.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Summer challenges finish your pig performance. Digestrum Finish can help. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/finish. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
Hello and welcome to the SwineIt podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host, and today I have Dr. Joe Connor as my guest. Dr. Connor is the Emeritus President of Carthage Veterinary Service and Professional Swine Management. Dr. Connor has vast experience in the swine industry, serving as a veterinary consultant. He's been a mentor to many, many young veterinarians and a leader in the industry. He's received numerous awards and recognition for his years of expertise and contributions in veterinary medicine and swine production. Dr. Connor was a mentor to me early in my career, and it's a pleasure to have you on our show.
Yeah, thanks, Tara. Thanks for the introduction. It just says that I've been in the industry for quite some time.
Well, absolutely. And we're happy to hear what you have to say. So today we're going to discuss Dr. Connor's visions for steps to eradicate PRRS in the U.S. swine herd. So given your role in your vast roles in the industry, I'm confident that most of our listeners know you. But before we get into our discussion about PRRS eradication and how to get there, just introduce yourself a little bit more to the audience and give some of the depth of your career path.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up on a widely diversified farm that included pigs, cattle, dairy, chickens. We raised turkeys for 5 years. We had a flock of sheep, and we also had a couple of horses to ride on Saturdays and Sundays when things got boring. Grew up in Central Illinois, attended and got my DVM from the University of Illinois, and then about 20 years later got my master's from the University of Minnesota. I located in Western Illinois, Carthage, Illinois, directly out of University of Illinois, and have essentially remained there my entire career. I did spend approximately 2 years as Vice President of Health Services for PIC, and then returned back to our business in Carthage, Illinois.
Yeah, and I think, Joe, that's where we first met when I was at a school, a little fledgling veterinarian. You were the vice president of health, I believe, at PIC. So after that, I worked closely with you on a lot of projects. So glad to have you and hear what you have to say today.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the issues we have are still the issues we had when you and I started together, but we certainly have made a lot of progress in a number of these key areas.
Cargill Animal Nutrition and Health Pork Solutions is a locally focused global animal nutrition company that offers a proven range of customized nutrition, health, and business solutions you can trust to build more profitable systems with confidence and peace of mind. Our research-backed and data-driven approach is our foundation. Learning your goals and business challenges is the top priority for our people.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to talk about steps to PRRS eradication. But before we do that, let's talk about just the current state of PRRS in the industry. And, you know, we all, if you've been anywhere involved in the swine industry in the U.S., you've, you know, had to deal with PRRS and the effects. So tell us where we are in the industry today, and then we'll jump into kind of where do we go.
Yeah, and just a little bit of back history too, Tara. Actually, the the first cases that I saw of PERS, I actually was not able to diagnose. I was asked to troubleshoot for a large system in Nebraska, and the pigs at that time were expressing primarily CNS signs plus the typical abortions, weak pigs, and they had submitted over 100 tissue samples to the different universities without a diagnosis. And of course, that just gives us a little bit of the timeline that until that virus was identified, we just called a mystery swine disease at that time. But since that time, we've clearly progressed. And if we go to our current status, I think we all recognize that in the last 3 years, the strains that have evolved are typically are more virulent. They have a higher transmission rate. They tend to have a higher mortality on both segments of the production, so both the reproductive side and in the grow finish side. And if you look at our Morrison swine database, you'd say we're actually a little bit below trend line for this time of the year, but with this recent weather patterns, extreme cold, we may see that flip here shortly over the next 2 or 3 weeks. But I think it's suffice to say that our recognition of the cost of this virus has intensified. And even what I've seen over the last 3 years as well has been that even though we can, as we recover, reduce our mortality in the wean to finish back to relatively good rates, the growth performance of those pigs tends to still drag, even though our mortality is within reason. And to put it in perspective, we would see closeouts that might be below 4% mortality, wean to finish, but yet it requires us about 30 days longer to meet our target weight. And so we still got drag on that particular virus even after the sow population starts to recover and the mortality morbidity recovers in the growing pig population.
So not only just measuring the impact on the sow herd, and once you get to a negative pig or weaning mostly negative pigs, I guess the stages to progress to negative, you're seeing more of an impact in the growth rate, not necessarily mortality rate of the pigs.
Yes, that's correct. So as the prevalence, we get 8+ weeks after the reproductive episode. And so we've still got positive pigs being weaned, but a relatively low prevalence and continuing to decrease that prevalence with what we would say are quite good quality pigs being weaned. We're still often seeing then that drag on average daily gain throughout that growing pig period.
So I think we can all agree it's worth going after, right? And like I said, if you've been in the swine industry in the U.S., you've had PERS touch your farm or the industry or your product, or in some way you've dealt with it. So we're going to jump back to, I guess, the reason we're picking pseudorabies is that's the last virus we were able to eradicate from the U.S. swine herd. And that was my understanding, Joe, when I got out of school in the mid-90s, we were working towards that process and the pig market wasn't great at the end of the 1990s. And so that was a big push to get that virus out the door. How does that, tell us about that. I was, again, new to the industry, and I know it was a regulatory program set up at least 20 to 30 years before that we actually got it eradicated. So tell us about that process and then maybe what the similarities might be for us to tackle this one.
I think what was good about that discussion is producers and the veterinary community finally got to a point to say that we could not live with that virus. What was interesting in those early discussions, which took I think at least 2 to 3 years to come to a consensus, we were actually dealing with much less diagnostic information and capabilities than what we have today, and actually less tools than what we had today. But what was good about the program is that it had industry support, it had veterinary community support, and ultimately it had regulatory support that you need as you think about eliminating any pathogen in the swine population. But I think you would appreciate that during those early discussions, there was a tremendous in-depth discussions back and forth about could pseudorabies be eliminated, could it not be eliminated, what's the actual cost, was the cost of that virus. But at the end of the day, we all came together to initiate that program. Now, there was certainly some milestones along that program that helped us, and that is there was regionalization because there was recognition that in certain areas of the U.S., some of the requirements could not be met early in the program, whereas in other regions of the industry, they could be met. So focus on those regions where we could manage pig movement better, we could manage the surveillance, and then continue to intensify the program as we move forward. And fortuitously, when you put that type of program out in front and you get the different segments of the industry involved, we did have vaccines that came along, and those vaccines proved to be quite effective and then became quite helpful in the final stages of the eradication program. But so as you think about where we're at with PRS today, I think we're getting a recognition, as we've have discussed, about what is the cost of that virus. And we have the recognition that the mutation rate, it seems about every 3 years based on the data, we have a more virulent strain that evolves. That strain then settles down and another strain then develops. As we make that recognition, we started to discount weaned pigs positive, and that's given us a signal, not only as we've already talked about the economic cost on the grow finish pig, but now it's given us a strong signal on the weaned pig as we look at the discount rates that are coming in a PRRS positive pig. Similarly, I would say, Tara, that as we think about a One Health system as we go forward and we look at where we're using antibiotics and what is driving the use of antibiotics, clearly PRRS is an underlying insult that is pushing us to restrict a lot of our decisions that we'd like to make as we move forward. So as you think about, as you think about the parallels and the timing of our discussion is fantastic because just recently Scott D. put together a group for a committee to look at the elimination of PRRS on a national basis and to start the discussion. And so we just recently had an article published in the AVMA Journal, which starts to lay out the framework and the stakeholder discussions for this type of elimination program, recognizing that there's some of the similar hurdles that we had in pseudorabies, and we probably got one additional hurdle would be the aerosol movement of the virus between close populations. But we clearly got the technology to prevent that movement at a cost. And I think as we start the discussion, we will be able to address some of those barriers. And in that particular document, it's laid out some of the important non-negotiable items that we think are on the table as we consider such a program.
I think that's great. I wasn't aware that we had, as an industry moved forward into, trying to get that network of stakeholders together and start discussing it. So that's great news. So what about the regulatory efforts? So with pseudorabies, it was a program that was both regulatory, using state and federal veterinarians working together with producers and practicing veterinarians with a framework on how to get that done. How would that look with PRRS? And is there still that regulatory component that you're thinking on?
Ultimately, I think it'll be a framework that's very similar to what we utilized during the pseudorabies eradication. Of course, one of the things that is entirely different and a challenge that we didn't have during pseudorabies was our movement of pigs. And as we all recognize today that we move pigs across long geographical distances, and also our populations in any given area are more dense than what they would have been during those early or during the pseudorabies eradication. So those have got to be addressed, though I think similarly in terms of identifying regions where the elimination and we can get cooperation on these pig movements. We all recognize that those have to be proactive rather than reactive, because you and I get restricted by, we have a new outbreak of a virus today. We can notify the closest producers that those pigs are going to go to. We can try to reroute those pigs. But a lot of times today, your choices in a very short term, the first 4 weeks after an outbreak, are restricted because we don't proactively have those barns located, identified with cooperation. So it's going to take an opening up of that cooperation and proactively identifying where we're going to move those pigs to for a period of time. But over time, you would expect that we can get that cooperation, and we'll have to do that in order to make the program move forward.
Well, like you mentioned earlier, we have a lot more of the tools that we didn't have right back then with pseudorabies. One is that communication and that network and the testing. And so, we know pretty early in an outbreak that we have an outbreak at a sow farm or at a nursery or a young grow finish pig, just based on the clinical signs and the diagnostics that we have that are, quick and easy and very accurate today that we maybe didn't have back in the pseudorabies time. And having the network of communication, so the mapping, like you said, what we're missing is a proactive thought process or plan of, if my herd breaks and my pigs normally go to these barns, what would I do differently in the early outbreak, having a new virus? Where would those grow finish pigs go? And I don't think that's any different than the thought process we should or need to have with, a foreign animal disease, right? So that's a communication or an effort for each individual farm that should be happening anyway, not just with a domestic disease.
Yeah, that's well said. And to that point, what we do have, Tara, is tremendous diagnostics today and ways to do surveillance. Now, we're going to have to cooperate and put in requirements for that surveillance, and then to flow that data. And we certainly need to be even more proactive with our communication than what we are today. When we look at the a new outbreak in a particular sow herd, we frequently have great communication, maybe within the close neighbors or within the system. But early on, we need that communication to your point, to where the pigs are going to be moved. And then the communication, if we're missing any neighboring producers or pig populations, that we would want to notify and have discussions with.
Yeah, I think we have to strengthen that communication and that knowledge of where all of the at-risk pigs are in that location, right? And establishing, you know, how far from the farm that broke with a new virus, you know, what kind of are your regionalization? How far does it go out, right? And what's that communication look like? Really similar, like we've talked about, to planning for a foreign animal disease. You know, you said regionalization was important in the pseudorabies program, and I don't see how you can do an eradication program without it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you know, one of the pillars is certainly going to be biosecurity. I think we understand what we need to do, but actually, for myself, when we've put cameras in different farms, it's been quite interesting to me that even though we have very tight SOPs, there are gremlins that occur that just happen on the day-to-day operation of a swine farm that provide some risk that we have the opportunity to manage those risks more tightly. It's just a matter of using the technology that we have today, whether that's geofencing or that's cameras, but then starting to collectively look at that data and then collectively saying, well, these are common areas across X number of farms, so let's proactively address those common areas and take them off of the work document and then move on.
I want to talk a little bit about the challenges. You know, I think, like you said, we have gremlins. I like that terminology. In the sow farm, we have a lot of processes and you know, biosecurity steps that are really tough to get done, especially in the winter when PRRS is at, you know, its peak and we've got to load pigs in, you know, a snowy, cold environment. But I think on the sow farm level, as an industry, we've done a good job at focusing on those and getting those challenges addressed. Not to say there's not some compliance that we can do better, but if you look at grow finish, what are the challenges we have for the PRRS virus and grow finish? Particularly, you know, there's a lot of our grow finish sites that wouldn't have those biosecurity attributes that we focused on in the sow farm, from, you know, the transport to loading to cleaning and sanitation. And then, you know, we can go beyond the challenge of transport to the processing plant, right? So I think there's really kind of, that's the elephant in the room, essentially, to stopping this particular virus.
Yeah, I would concur with that. With that, though, we really have the data to support the things we should do. Now, the things that you mentioned in the finisher that becomes quite difficult is that, by the way, our industry flows pigs. We typically move people between sites. We typically don't monitor those caregivers maybe as close as we should as they move between sites. We frequently do not have the trailers all washed, disinfected prior to when we move pigs, at least to the slaughter plant. And dead animal disposal remains a challenge. But if I go back to, that's where I think, Tara, we need concerted efforts to continue to do the research and continue to look at practical solutions to those. So if I go back just recently, I think Schick supported a study through the University of Missouri where they looked at air that was blowing off of people as they moved between the sites. And that's not as good as a shower, but a Danish change plus an airflow plus hand sanitizers was quite good. So maybe a practical approach. Certainly recognize the benches are important, the changing of clothes, coveralls, Danish change. The important thing there is to execute that repeatedly. Then we still need additional practical ways to wash trailers. We've funded different studies. Actually, I was part of the group here 2 years ago that asked for novel ideas, and we didn't come up with a lot of novel ideas to research. So it still sets out there that we've got to figure out from the ideal way, which is to power wash hot water, disinfect, dry. There's got an in-between that still gets us to a dramatic reduction of a transmission. The third thing would be that mentioned was dead animal disposal is actually difficult on wean to finish sites, partially because, again, the way we have them segregated, as you mentioned, snow below freezing temperatures, below zero temperatures here the last 2 weeks, maybe equipment that moves back and forth between those sites. Sometimes the equipped tractors don't start. All of that brings the gremlins in at the wrong time when transmission rate is most likely. So we've got to continue to work on solutions in those three areas.
Yeah, I think, recapping a little bit of what we've discussed, we've got the desire in the industry to get rid of this virus, both producer and veterinary, and we've got a regulatory framework already in place to go to follow and to make more robust for this particular virus. We've got a lot of testing and diagnostic capability that we have for this virus, very quick results. We can get those overnight. We've got diagnostic labs that have that set up for us. We've got processes in place in the sow farm that we kind of know what to do, and we've been able to get a lot of farms negative and keep them negative on the sow farm side. So as you mentioned, it's really the transport, the grow finish side, and the mortality disposal that I think are the keys. And I'm seeing a lot of effort with research in those areas. You mentioned SHIC, so Swine Health Information Center has got a huge initiative on the grow finish side to help us understand how we can get those pieces.
Yeah, I fully expect we'll get there. We just got to continue to say, what's the objective? And then what focus do we need in those areas that seem to be restrictive today?
It's time for our famous three.
Biofractal is your AI-driven partner for understanding what's really happening inside chicken biology and turning those insights into action. Using scientifically validated methods, the industry's largest transcriptomic datasets, and proprietary biological indices, our savvy services turn complex molecular data into clear, practical insights that can be used to make decisions. R&D and technical teams, veterinarians and nutritionists rely on Biofractal to validate modes of action, compare solutions, and troubleshoot performance, accelerating product development in nutrition, health, and genetics, and enabling measurable gains in bird performance and welfare under real production conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're concluding our time together with Dr. Joe Connor. We've been discussing the future of the U.S. swine industry without the PRRS virus. How do we eradicate the most costly disease that swine producers face? If you have comments or questions for our guests or about our platform, please message us. If you liked our show, please give us a thumbs up. But before we sign off, Joe, do you have some final thoughts or take homes for our listeners on how we tackle this initiative?
Well, I'm excited that we're starting as the industry to think about, and we have really alignment with the industry and the different health groups to address elimination. And as we talked about with pseudorabies. We were fortunate enough to get a vaccine to come through. And we do have technology on the horizon, if the industry accepts this, with a PRRS-resistant pig that would also be quite proactive in terms of supporting the elimination program. We've got to continue to work on biosecurity hazards.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we've done a great job in the industry of funding research in those areas.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And as you mentioned, you know, I don't think having a vaccine like we did for the pseudorabies virus is something that should stop us from this initiative, because there's a lot of other things that we have in our toolbox that we can start to use, and we'll see over the next years, you know, and this isn't going to happen overnight, right? This is going to be a long process to get to where we want to go. And so those technologies will keep coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't mention, but biological companies continue to work quite aggressively in finding a vaccine solution. I think we can be somewhat excited about some of the T cell work that's coming down the pipeline. So we'll continue to see that. And to your point, those things tend to develop as the program moves forward, and we have the pressures we need for solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for that great discussion and your vision. But before I let you go, there's a hallmark of our SwineIt podcast show where we ask our guests three specific questions. So let's move into that. So, Joe, what's your favorite book or resource that you use in your area of expertise?
One of the most exciting things, Tara, I think, in our industry is the amount of practical current research we have ongoing, not only domestically, but also globally. And so what I typically do is look first at the current research for the particular area that I'm interested in. And I typically segment that down to the last 3 years. Then I go back to the diseases of swine and look at the history, because that helps me think through the progression and then where I should focus my efforts on.
Yeah, it's so exciting to see, you know, research projects that are focusing on one small area, but all of that builds, right, to getting some more knowledge about how to tweak a current process or even something outside of the box, like you mentioned, that I hadn't heard about. And I'll look up is the research on using air, right, to kind of, you know, cleanse versus, you know, blowing that virus out. So very interesting. And I'm always excited about the student presentations at our veterinary meetings that come up with these innovative ideas.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how about a favorite book or resource outside of your area of expertise that you think would be of interest to us?
Well, I just reread for the second time, and is Peter Zeihan's book, The End of the World is Just the Beginning, because it fits to what we're having globally in these different interactions and challenges today, and lays out some explanation why some of these things are falling in line as they were projected.
Yeah. So the old adage of history repeats itself a little bit.
Yes.
Great. So my last question for you is, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
Yeah, I think there's two. One is curious. So for me, that's reasking the same question and saying, is there a different approach? Is there a better approach? And the second thing is being persistent, because once your information gets embedded in you, it becomes a little bit harder to be curious and continue to ask, is there better solutions?
Right. Yeah. Don't go back and research something that you've already researched, right? And keep asking the same question.
Exactly.
Well, very good. Thank you for being the guest of my show, and look forward to talking more about the PRRS eradication program.
Yeah. Thanks, Jared.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent with OPA time zone hassle. delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.